I will talk about the manna and the quail, which are described there in Exodus 16, Numbers 11, and Psalm 78. Well, I think the first takeaway that that you take from all that is that miracles don't make people believe. Israel had the miracle of the manna every day. They were led in the wilderness by the pillar of fire and cloud in the daytime. They had the quail, they had water out of the rock that it seems followed them through the desert, and yet they still in their hearts turned back to Egypt. They still took with them the tabernacle of Moloch. Acts 7:43, Stephen reminds us that they carried two tabernacles through the wilderness, that of Yahweh and that of Moloch. They carried the star of their god Remphan as a symbol, as a kind of a pole, talisman almost, just as they carried the standards of the tribes of Israel. They took the idols of Egypt with them through the Red Sea, so says Ezekiel 20. And yet God poured out miracle upon miracle to them. This is where I disagree with Pentecostalism, with the idea that you got to see miracle and then you believe. Not at all. You see miracle and don't believe. That's the whole message of the Bible, really. Faith, therefore, is not predicated upon miracle. Faith is a gift from God that we are open to. And it's not a case of the visible. I mean, Hebrews 11 defines faith very clearly like that, that it is not based upon the evidence of things that are seen. It could not be clearer that it is not based upon visible evidence, and all the examples that are quoted there in Hebrews 11 are of people who believed without visible evidence. And Abraham, for example, against hope, against every reason to have hope, believed in hope. Faith is trust, and trust in God is not the same as coming to a rational conclusion on the basis of a load of sort of rational evidence. That's not a belief. And I think you need to analyze your own faith in terms of that, because apologetics is in my opinion, mythical. The idea that if you get access to all these apologetics, you therefore shall believe. No. Most people throughout history who have believed and given their life for their faith in the Lord Jesus Christ and in his Father have done so not on the basis of apologetics, because they didn't have access to it, but on the basis, as I have said, of following that intuitive gift of the Spirit which has been given to them. Because faith, as we say from Hebrews 11, is not based upon what is visibly in front of you. And, of course, in my life, I've baptized several thousand people who came mainly from Soviet-style, communist-style atheism, materialism, and Muslims as well. And in all those cases, I never had to use any form of apologetics. Let me demonstrate to you that there is a God, that the Bible is true, that Jesus is his son. Never. For one thing, the apologetics don't cut it with me anyway. Secondly, I didn't need to. Because the simple message of Jesus Christ, if it's believed humbly in faith, that of itself becomes a self-reinforcing propulsion towards true faith. And I mention that because there's a lot of talk about apologetics and, oh, look at this bit of evidence. Look at this video. Look at this whatever website. Oh, there's this great evidence for God or for the Bible. And, well, I would not spend a lot of time on that, because if you do, well, what happens if it's disproved? What's going to happen to your faith? Will you not find that the grounds upon which you believe, which were visible grounds, evidence-based, if the evidence is taken away, well, what's going to happen to your faith? And, science is a slippery thing. What appears to be solid evidence often isn't. Anyway, that's in passing. The point is that they here rebelled against God. They complain and they have this idea that things were much better back in Egypt, and we remember the tasty food that we had, and now we're just stuck here in the wilderness. And there is a human tendency, it's part of human nature, to think that the past was better. And we're warned about this in Ecclesiastes, about not saying the former days were better than these. And I think that is a form of escapism that's almost built into us, that to sort of rationalize the pain of living today, we look back on the past as if it was wonderful back then, and everything has gone downhill since then. And yet the simple message of spirituality and of the Lord Jesus Christ is that we have been given life and life more abundantly right now. And we got life more abundantly right now, then you're not going to look back on the past, because life is a joy to live right now. And it's people who don't have that positive experience of life with the Lord Jesus right at this moment who I think will be inclined to look back and live in the past and assume the past is better than now. When in fact, we're on a journey closer and closer to God, and so actually the best is ahead and it's getting better all the time. Now is our salvation nearer than when we first believed? So, they were given this manna and the quails right in the heat of all those complaints that they made. Now, I guess God was going to give them the manna anyway, and the quails and so forth, and the water from the rock. But it was as if he waited for them to have that need, and he wanted to see whether they would come to him in faith and beg him to look after them, or whether, unfortunately, they would go the way they did of bitterness and of complaint. And God works according to a similar way, I think, now. He knows our need, and he will provide. So then, this was really God's grace to them, because for all that murmuring and wanting to go back to Egypt and back to the slave camps of Egypt, I mean, anyone less than Yahweh, God of Israel, would have said, well, go then. You don't want to be part of my program, well, go. But instead, he propels them forward. I will bring them out of Egypt. I will bring them through the wilderness. I will bring them into the promised land. This is what God had repeatedly said when he reveals his name. I will be who I will be. The very essence of God is to almost force through. I say almost because he won't make a person be saved who totally is against the idea. The whole essence of I will be who I will be, Yahweh, is I will almost force through my plan to save you. The element of forcing there is, shall we say, pretty strong. And so the cloud comes down, and I suggest it's the cloud of glory. The quails and the manna revealed there on the earth, and then the cloud lifts and they are revealed. And it's said about the manna that you will see my glory. God's glory was in giving them this. And yet, with the quails, we read in Psalm 78 that God slew the fattest of them who gorged themselves on the quails. Isn't it funny that it was the fattest of them who complained, we're hungry. Oh, we haven't got anything to eat in the desert. They weren't in real need. You can learn that from that, but it was the fattest of them who were slain for gorging themselves on the quails. And so it was not that they were really starving hungry. They just wanted a better life, and they wanted to have Egypt in the wilderness. And that was not to be. They were to totally leave Egypt. And yet you see all through this, despite their awful behavior, the love of God and the sensitivity of God. I mean, Psalm 78 says that the quails appeared around their tent doors. I mean, Israel, what did you want? This is door-to-door food delivery from heaven to earth. And the quails were up to 3 feet high. That's quite high. You know, a very tall man is, 6 foot high, and 3 foot is like half of him. And that's how deep these quails were. Like, how much do you want? Deliver to your door. You say you're hungry, I can provide. And I think God was really making that point. You say that I don't care for you. You say that you're going to perish in the wilderness. You know, I can give you as much as you want. I can give you meat up to 3 feet high so that you're wading around in the stuff up to your waist or more, delivered right to your door. And this is the great comfort when we wonder whether we are going to pull through materially in life. And there's nobody, particularly anyone who's had a family, who is not at some point deeply worried about this. How financially, how materially are we going to make it? You know, we're on a wilderness journey, and God can provide manna up to your waist, meat up to your waist, if that's what you want. He can do it. He has absolute power. And he has promised us that he will give us our daily bread. And we are to pray, give us this day our daily bread. And that is, of course, alluding to the manna. But it's a hard prayer to pray, because the idea is, pray that God will provide you with food today, and he will. But only today. Give us our daily bread, the bread of today. That's the idea. Because in the world in which we live, we want more than daily bread, and we want more than one set of clothes that won't wear out throughout the wilderness journey. We're worried about the future. We don't any longer live on the land with extended families to look after us in our old age. We think we need so much else. And yet, God has asked us to live day by day and to believe that he will provide the bread for today, and that every day he will answer that prayer. And that was the case for Israel in the wilderness. And when they doubted it, you know, he's sort of almost not having a joke, but he would have brought the whole camp to a standstill with this amount of quail, 3 foot high, in order to, I think, just demonstrate to them, look, I can provide all things. And this, I think, is the point of final maturity that Job got to at the end of all his struggles. And he says, I know that you can do all things. And this really is the case. And he above all wants to save us. And he will do that. And he will be with us all the way there as well.